Good evening. The most important element of our life, what we should keep in mind constantly, is to live our life authentically, which means to live without creating something extra. We have a tendency to create extra things in our life because of our personal preferences. And this is where we can go astray. So, you know, when you visit the zoo, or even have a chance to travel abroad, you see, we know that the zebra has stripes, the fish has gills, and we accept, you know, these natural expressions of nature. We don't question and we don't complain about such things. Even if you prefer polka dots over stripes, even if you like polka dots more than you like stripes, you wouldn't make a fuss about the zebra stripes, would you? We don't do that. But what if you had a friend or some acquaintance, maybe even a family member, who had a particular habit or some kind of tendency that you didn't like it. It wasn't what you preferred. Would you make a fuss? Or would you accept it just as you do the zebra stripes? In Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, there's a lecture of Suzuki Roshi where he says, most people live in delusion involved in their problem. But to live is actually to be involved in problems. And to solve the problem is to be a part of it, to be one with it. How do we understand what is the meaning of what he's saying? And, in another lecture, part of another one of his Dharma talks, was about the famous koan, about the cart that doesn't go. He says, when your cart does not go, which do you whip, the cart or the horse? You know, if you hit the cart, it doesn't go. If you hit the horse, then maybe probably your cart will go. So how do problems arise in our life? The teachings, fundamental teachings of Buddhism, is that the problems we create problems in our life out of our desires, out of our grasping and wanting, we create problems. Which is another word for preferences. Our preferences. Preferences are the way we want things to be. And quite often they are not the way we want things to be. So this is how we create our problems. If we hit the cart, we are hitting our problem. Problem doesn't go away. A problem doesn't go away if we hit it. Our problem, the problems that we have are stubborn objects of our preferences. Stubborn objects of our preferences. Like if you preferred polka dots to stripes, would you hit the zebra stripes? Or if your friend has a tendency that irritates you, you prefer something else, would you hit your friend's habit? This is where our problems come from. We hit the cart. We hit the problem. That's a mistake, of course. We have to address ourselves to move the problem, to resolve the problem. When we hit ourselves, maybe we motivate ourselves to move. Then we can move the problem. So it means that our practice is to watch ourselves, know ourselves, see the preferences that we have that will create these problems. If we see ourselves, if we are stay aware of ourselves, when we allow ourselves to be the problem, when we own up to the problem and not put it outside of us, then the problem can move. When we nudge ourselves, the problem can move. And that's what we learn to do in our practice. Most people, of course, try to hit the problem. In daily life, you see people hitting the problem all the time. You're driving in traffic and the car in front of you isn't going fast enough to suit your preference, so you scream, hit the horn, and pound your fist, hit the problem, and we become crazy. But if we see what's going on with ourselves, when we become the problem, then our preferences don't overwhelm us. So, as Suzuki Roshi asked, which do you hit? The cart or the horse? The problem or yourself? So, we lose authenticity of our life when our life becomes oriented and driven by our preferences. And when our preferences become demands. And when those demands are not met, we lose our self-composure and we become angry. But if we have some awareness, if we have some mindfulness, then we will come back to ourselves. And we will see the foolishness of hitting the object of our demand, you know, the cart or the problem. If we can't do that, if we continue to hit the problem, it turns into suffering. Spend our life pushing our preferences, blaming others. That's a life of suffering. There is no authenticity there. So, suffering comes about when we make demands of our life. When we make demands of people, when you make demands of living things and of inanimate things. That's when our life doesn't feel very good. So, the usual way that individuals feel they can get out of their suffering is to simply get what they want, strive for what they want, strive to fulfill their preferences. But this is a kind of childlike belief. It says, well, I feel unhappy. I want happy feelings. I don't want sad feelings. This is childlike. Sometimes we get sad. Sometimes we can't have our preferences. So when we feel frustrated by not filling our preferences, we may try to entertain ourselves or soothe ourselves or eat something, go out and drink, satisfy our ego in some way. And so for a moment we may feel better, but we have not reduced our suffering because our orientation is backward. We are hitting our problem. And we have not increased our capacity to respond creatively to difficult situations and to problems. So, our practice, it's possible that our practice can show us the way out. The way out of suffering is to first recognize the demands of our ego, to recognize our preferences, which create feeling of suffering. But because we are so stubborn, because we humans are so stubborn, it's quite often difficult to recognize our demand as confusion or a delusion. We think we're very valid. We think it's very valid to have this collection of preferences. You know, our ego would rather be in misery instead of giving up its demand. You may have experienced this with maybe a friend or acquaintance who makes themselves unhappy because they continue to do the same thing over and over, and what they're doing doesn't work and only creates more problem. And you say, well, you know, you should stop that. That's harming you. No. No. They say, no, the ego would rather be in misery than give up its preference. The ego would rather be in misery rather than give up its idea of its own importance. So the starting point of recognizing our preferences or our demands as a delusion is to see what's going on, to see the truth, to accept it, to accept our tendency and to live in it. To understand that something is going on that is diminishing our authenticity. That we are making demands of life and of other people. If we're fortunate enough, If we have some practice, some at least some degree of practice, we may come to recognize what we've been doing, what we have been doing, and say to ourselves, I'm not the center of the universe, after all. There is something greater than me. We finally come to see something greater than myself and something greater than the small personal world that I have created for myself. And when that recognition occurs, then any pride we have in ourself diminishes. And we start to find some humility in the midst of something greater. This humility is not about, does not come from shame or powerlessness. It is the humility that arises when the ego does not make demands, does not demand fame or recognition or love or prestige. This is a humility that arises when we have no preferences. Well, of course, we always have preferences. This is a humility that is manifested when we don't push or demand that our preferences be fulfilled, and is therefore the opposite of pride and the opposite of arrogance. The way to true humility mostly comes through suffering. Of feeling humiliated in the small sense, in the ego sense. When our pride is hurt or our preferences aren't being met and we suffer from it. When that happens, it means we need to accept the painful feeling we're having and recognize what it is we are demanding. Like when you see, and seeing how foolish it is. It's like going to the zoo and seeing a zebra and saying, hey, I don't like stripes. That, of course, is foolish. When we see our ego preferences the same way as foolish demands, then we acknowledge our preferences and recognize that we have to be careful not to let them overwhelm us. So when we feel the suffering that we bring about because we are pushing our own preferences, when we can face it, when we recognize what we have been doing, and when we can let go of our demands that things be other than what they are, we can return to our true self. So if you're driving on Middlefield or San Antonio or Ringsdorf or the freeway and somebody ahead of you is going slower than what you prefer. Let him go slower than what you prefer. We say to ourselves, it's okay. I can go at this pace. Keeping an eye on our preferences is the mature response to suffering. It means we are coming back to ourself. We are hitting the horse rather than hitting the cart. We are encouraging ourselves. We are not trying to hit the problem. So our practice is to watch yourself. And as we frequently repeat Dogen's saying, his famous saying, to study Buddhism is to study the self. We watch ourselves. Our practice enables us to watch ourselves. And to recognize when we wander away from our true self. And we can see a gap that may exist between ourself and our problem, between ourself and our suffering. We don't want a separation. When we accept our suffering, when we accept how we allow our preferences to overwhelm us, when there is no gap, then we can return to ourselves. Then we can be the problem. But then the problem is not suffering. It's just some problem. It's just some preference. It's not a problem. So our practice is simply not to be overwhelmed by preferences and desires, which will come up. And then finally, I recently saw a statement by Suzuki Roshi where he says, when you are fooled by something else, the damage will not be so big. But when you are fooled by yourself, it is fatal. Does anybody have a question? Is it Omar?
That's my place on Wednesday when I came to sit. I was in quite a lot of pain. And I let my preferences overwhelm me. I had eaten chocolate, too much of it, too many tomatoes, shrimp, had wine. So a combination of all these led to my gout flaring up. And it was done in excess, and it was just, when I came to sit, it just was like, something just opened up inside of me and went, oh, you did all these things to yourself. You are responsible, and this, you you know, went overboard with everything. So it was just such a realization that I was like, oh, now I know I have to be careful where I have to pull back, you know, not get let this completely take me over or get taken over by it. It was just interesting. And it was just a simple thing, but it happened. But thank you for the lecture.
How do you feel this week?
Huh?
How do you feel this week?
This week, no.
Good. Good. Yes.
Actually, when you were telling the story of the cart, the problem horse or the cart, I remembered a movie I saw when I was small, a black and white movie, and it's supposed to be a comedy scene. And it's shown that this guy has his, the horse carts in the olden days, even in Bombay, in India, when I was small, there were horse carts. So from the station to home would come. So there was a very typical thing in the movies, in the black and white movies. So there was this scene where this driver of the cart, right, has the passengers come and sit, and the horse just didn't move. And this, the driver is supposed, it's supposed to be a comedy scene. And the driver just didn't do the right thing of pulling onto the horse properly. You have to do it 2-3 times or pat. That's the way the cart would move. But the horse wouldn't move, so he gets down and then he kicks the wheel of the cart. That, why are you not moving? And why are you not moving? And he kicks the wheels, and then he comes in the cart, and the passengers are waiting, and now he's worried that the passengers are going to leave, so he starts yelling at the passengers. You know, you didn't come in time, and probably you put too much weight, and now the cart is not moving, and he's blaming all the passengers, he's blaming the wheel and kicking, and the different passengers move away. And eventually, you know, the driver thinks that, oh, the passengers are going away because the cart is not moving. And then somebody from the behind says, they didn't leave because the cart didn't move or the horse didn't go ahead. They left looking at you, how you're solving the problem. So they don't trust on the journey.
Yes.
What's going to happen?
Oh, let's get away.
It was supposed to be a comedy scene, but I think it had a lot to say. When you said that, it reminded me of that. So basically, the horse just needed a gentle pat on the back, and it would move. But now, the person who is driving the cart doesn't even realize that the problem has shifted from the horse to himself. And the people are moving away not because of the horse, because of
him. That's good. That's good. So when we do such things from now on, we should be aware that somebody's watching us and is ready to go away. Thank you. Did you have a question?
So I understand not having preferences, but I don't understand the mechanism by which you would make practical decisions based on not having preferences. For example, if someone's hitting me, I could choose to either be okay with the hitting or remove myself. And I'm not sure the practical aspect of it.
Yeah. Well, the preferences that we refer to are manifestations of the ego and desires, and mainly self-oriented, a selfish thing. I want this for me. If somebody is pushing you or annoying you, you know, it's okay to get away. When a problem comes up in life, we have to consider a good solution. In the case you talk about, getting away from the other person is probably a good solution. If you think a good solution is to hit him back, maybe he's not so good. But when there's a problem that's threatening us or creating harm, we can consider and choose a good solution. It's when our preferences create problems themselves is when we have the suffering. When there is no problem, but we start demanding something for ourselves, then a problem arises. So, you know, the authentic life is to live our life fully and peacefully and take care of problems when they arise. So we make decisions all the time based on our best judgment of keeping the peace and not creating suffering. Thank you. Yes.
So I'd like to go back to your example of driving. And so you're driving and the guy in front of you is slow, so you don't want to be upset about it, right? Because that would be hitting the car. You could also accept it, which is just be happy that you're behind this car. Or I think maybe could you possibly hit the horse, so to speak, and just change lanes and pass him and go forward? And then if that's true, would you say then that it's less so about necessarily accepting a situation, but being not being overwhelmed by a situation.
Yeah. Yeah, passing the other car is fine. As long as we don't develop some kind of antagonism towards this other driver and make ourselves crazy. I says, he's going too slow. I have to get somewhere. I think I'll just go around him. That's enough. Not, you, hey, we don't need to do that. Thank you. Yes.
Related to his question, what is the perspective on self-defense? Is self-defense okay?
In certain situations, self-defense is okay. But I think best attitude or best orientation is to avoid conflict whenever we can. Avoid conflict. Try to maintain peace, not create suffering, but there may be a situation where you have to defend yourself when there is no other way. That is the last thing.
Sometimes there are cases when avoiding conflict
or make those attempts to avoid conflict create more trouble than the conflict itself.
How does that happen?
Well, I'm not really thinking about conflict with other people, although I'm sure that's also sometimes happens with that, but sometimes you try to avoid something unpleasant, or I don't know, avoid having a difficult conversation or something, and you can do this for years, and it can just always be on you, I don't know.
I don't think that entering into a conflict can ever prevent a future conflict. You know, it's pretty difficult to, it's pretty impossible to find equanimity or peace of mind if we create a conflict. If we don't make our best effort to avoid a conflict, it's pretty hard to have peace of mind. If we cannot honestly say to ourselves, "I did my very best to avoid the conflict," we can't say that to ourselves. We have a problem. Yes, please. Could you say it again, please?
You try not to let a conflict overwhelm you by ignoring it, by not letting it overwhelm you, but the continuous bad-mouthing.
The gentle way is better. The friendly way is better. Trying to create harmony where there is separation is the best way. And it means we have to be attentive and diligent and creative, because sometimes the way to create harmony is can be a little complex, but we should make our best effort. It's pretty simple just to strike back in frustration or anger. That's very simple. We don't have to think about it. Don't have to be creative. And usually it's the ego that's doing that, striking back. So if we can drop off our ego in a difficult situation, come back to ourself, we can find a way to create harmony. When that is our approach to life, we find a lot of confidence. Thank you.
Quick question about peacefully finding a solution and avoiding conflict. Like, if we are human beings and we have relationships, relatives, and a lot of times there are conflicts within families, and many times there are conflicts, and then there is a threatening also that if you don't do this, then the weakness is taken advantage of, and said that if you don't do this, this is at stake or something, and then you end up saying, okay, fine. The more peaceful way is to just say, okay, fine, do it your way. And so you took care of the situation peacefully without conflict, but then it takes away something very important from the person who has tried to choose peace and not conflict.
Well, it's not necessary to run away. Sometimes we just have to say, well, I don't agree with you, and so I can't go along with you. And just be firm. Yes?
In a way, a continuation of what I said, and she said, again, if you acknowledging that I can't continue, I can't agree with you, and just leaving it there, is still going to take away something very special or important to you, like your sibling. If it's in case of, let's say, three siblings, and one influences the other, then in this case you're losing both of them, in this particular case. So you can say, I don't agree with you here, but this person is already under the influence, so you just state that and leave it, and try to reach harmony within yourself, but that very special person is also being taken away along with this.
Oh,
again, it's, I realize the preference is for maybe not to lose maybe your family, but and you can try to just not let your preference overwhelm you or the conflict overwhelm you. But still,
well, whatever you do, don't hit the cart. Let's just remember that.